What inventions do you consider the most influential in your life? As I turned on the air conditioning yesterday when I got home from a trip because the house was hot and stuffy, I remember the days of my youth when we endured hot and stuffy, and I was thankful that I didn't have to be uncomfortable. And then as I set my cable television box to record the Vietnam War on PBS last night, I was thankful that I didn't have to miss it because of my crazy early bedtime schedule. Can you think of inventions that changed the way you live, you work, you play, for the better or maybe for the worse? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Our guest is the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. Tim Harford is a journalist, economist, and broadcaster. He is a senior columnist at the Financial Times. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you very much for joining us. So I know you covered
My pleasure.
You have covered 50 inventions, a lot of topics under the wide umbrella of economics. What inspired you to write about inventions that shaped the modern economy?
Well, I'm always looking for interesting ways to describe the economy that determines how we live and how we work, what we get to do, the choices we have. It's all around us, but it often feels very abstract. Lots of jargon, lots of numbers. And I realized if I could write about all these different inventions, some very old, some very modern, and the way that they've reshaped the economic forces that are all around us, that would be a really great, fun, engaging way to talk about the economy. Everything from the plow 6,000 or 7,000 years ago through to modern inventions like the Google search algorithm or seller feedback mechanisms. So it's been great fun.
Yeah, and it is. It's really interesting to go through all of these inventions and think about how they have changed the way we live. But you mentioned that your goal in writing 50 inventions that shaped the modern economy was not to identify the 50 most economically significant inventions. What was your goal?
I wanted to tell interesting stories to surprise people. Give them information that they hadn't encountered before and make them think a little bit about the way the economy works. So, for instance, I didn't write about the automobile. Very, very important invention, but, it's all been said. I did write about the gramophone because there's a very specific economic effect that the gramophone had, which is that it increased income inequality in the music profession. That people whose skills didn't change, whose talents didn't change, whose income suddenly increased tenfold, or alternatively, other people who were out of a job, just because the technology in the industry changed. And of course, that's something that affects many, many industries. So talking about the gramophone gives me a foothold in, and then I can talk about how technology changes inequality in all sorts of industries.
Yeah, tell the story behind of the gramophone and the winners and the losers there.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that 200 years ago, the best paid singer in the world could really only, and we know who she was called Elizabeth Billington, and she had an affair with the future King of England. So she's a fascinating character. But she could only earn enough money to fill a based on the ticket sales from a performance in a concert hall in an opera house in central London. Whereas once the gramophone was invented, you could reach a truly global audience. So it completely changed the economics of being one of the world's best singers.
Yeah. At the top of your list was the plow, as you mentioned, or at least you begin the book with that story. Explain how the plow did more than, I guess, plow earth.
Yeah, well, we always think of inventions as being tools that solve problems for us. And the plow did solve a problem. It was broke up the ground, drew moisture to the surface, increased crop yields. But the plow did so much more, and that's why I wanted to start the book with the plow. The plow reshaped society. We moved from And the plough wasn't the only part of this, but we moved from hunter-gatherer societies to sedentary agricultural societies because grain crops are produced on a predictable basis. You know, you harvest every year and then you store them. That introduces the possibility that you could go and tax somebody else's income. You can't really tax a hunter-gatherer, a nomad, but you can tax a farmer. So suddenly you've got a tax system, you've got cities, you've got an agricultural surplus, all the good things and the bad things of civilization, all coming from the plough. So, I mean, it's a fascinating example of the way a technology can reshape all sorts of things. And it's not just, you know, we had a problem and the plough solved that problem. It's always more interesting than that.
Yeah. And you mentioned that whenever a new technology emerges, we should ask who will win and who will lose out as a result. Is there always a winner and a loser?
Well, yes. I think there almost always is. Sometimes the losses are quite small, only a few people, and it's not really such a big deal, and you can't stop progress. But at other times, the people who lose out are a huge community. So one of the examples in the book is the development of barbed wire in the late 19th century. So this was to solve a problem for settlers in the American Midwest. Abraham Lincoln had signed the Homesteading Act, said, you know, men, women, freed slaves, anyone who wants to go to the Midwest and farm and improve land, that land will be yours, legally yours. But practically, it only works if you've got some kind of technology that enables you to fence in land. And there just wasn't enough wood. So wooden fences didn't work. And so people furiously worked on a solution for a few years, and then a gentleman called J.F. Glidden of DeKalb, Illinois, patents barbed wire. It's hugely effective, and it really solves the problem that these settlers have. But, of course, you imagine the effect that it had on the Native American population and also on the old-time cowboys. So, the losses were catastrophic, but it did what people wanted it to do as far as the winners were concerned.
Yeah. And you did mention you start with the plow and something from a very long time ago, and then some things that are very, very new, like Google search. It seems as though everyone would benefit from the Google search. Is there a loser there?
Yeah, well, I mean, Google search is tremendously beneficial, but the interesting thing that we don't usually ask ourselves is when we search for something, and it usually is on Google, although not always, when we search for something, what we're shown tends to shape whose business is successful. Mm-hmm. So there's this whole invisible economy of people trying to get high up on the Google search rankings. So if you Google pizza restaurants near me, obviously you know your own local area, but if you're out of town, you know, what is Google going to show you? Whose pizza restaurant is going to be recommended?
Yeah.
Who controls that power? Or you're locked out of your house. The locksmith is the classic one. You're locked out of your house. You need a locksmith. You don't have a locksmith's number. You just Google it. And then who does Google send to your house? There's tremendous power here. And we just don't even think about it because we've become so used to the Google search algorithm as we think it's showing us the objective truth. This is just the truth about the world. Well, there's no such thing.
Yeah, just the other day, I was searching for hotels in a community out of town, and some came up, but not all of them came up, and there was actually one that I would have preferred. There are winners and losers there. Why does Google give a preference to a business that pays them money or something?
Yeah, well, if there's an advertising ranking, of course, and Google sells advertising, that's where all these billions of dollars come from for Google's income. It's selling ads. But the placement of businesses in the search results, it's more subtle things. It's to do with whether other people are recommending them, what their reputation is, what their web pages look like. Are they using a particular kind of protocol? Are their pages optimized to load quickly? And these things change all the time. So I'm not accusing Google of doing anything wrong. I'm just saying that you've got to make choices, and Google makes these choices and has a tremendous amount of influence. that we tend not to examine. I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to do without the Google search algorithm. I'm old enough to remember the internet before Google. Mm-hmm. Very, very difficult to find anything. But we do always have to ask, how is this shaping the world in ways that we maybe are not considering?
Tim Harford is a journalist, economist, a broadcaster. He is a senior columnist at the Financial Times and author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. And we are talking about some of those inventions, and we'll talk about more when we come back from news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. And we welcome your questions. We welcome the inventions that that you think were most influential in your life. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about inventions that shaped the modern economy, inventions that change the way that we work, that we play, that we live. And we are welcoming your thoughts, your questions, the inventions that you think were most influential in changing the way we live, changing the economy. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Tim Harford. He is the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. And we have Jerry in Armstrong Creek on the line, so let's go there next. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests.
Morning.
Yes, I've been a logger for many, many years. I think the cell phone has changed a lot. I can remember back when I had an employee get hurt, we'd have to drive out of the woods and go to some house that had a phone to get an ambulance to come out and get the person out of the woods. Now you just, anytime anything happens, if you need parts, if you need anything, you just pick up the cell phone and you call right from where you're sitting in your machine. And I also was a member of the legislature back in 1990, and used to use newspaper articles to do a lot of communication. I can't imagine running for office now without having a Facebook page, an internet page, and Twitter, and it's just changed. And as far as innovation in our machines, our processors that are used to cut trees now, they all have GPS because of the cell phones, and you don't have to go through and paint lines around the property you're working on. You just use that GPS right in your machine to tell you how far to cut.
Pretty amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's changed a lot.
Jerry, do you mind sharing your last name as a former member of the state legislature?
Yeah, Jerome Schwartz.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. And Tim, how about the cell phone?
Yeah, it's a great suggestion, and it's had a. I mean, Jerry's experience, of course, he's far away from the cities, logging, so it's great to have that portable communication device, the GPS as well. The cell phone has really been transformative, where existing infrastructure doesn't go. So one of the stories I tell in the book is of the use of cell phones in Kenya to replace banking. But it doesn't replace banking because, of course, people never had banking in the first place. So they're able to use a mobile money system called M-Pesa to send money to far-off relatives all via the cell phone. So as Jerry was saying with GPS, sometimes people develop this invention. GPS is a military invention. The cell phone is designed for phone calls. And people then take it and they adapt it and they use it for another purpose, like logging or like sending money to relatives.
Yeah, and besides the iPhone being one of the most successful products in the world, why did you put it in your list of 50?
Yeah, the iPhone, it is actually, I did the maths on this, I think it is the single most profitable product in history, even more than Microsoft Windows and Microsoft Office. The total amount of profit that this product has made, I think it's hard to think of another one that outperforms it. The reason the iPhone's in the book is because, again, it teaches us a lesson. And the lesson is about how who invented a product is not always who we might think. So we give Steve Jobs and his designer, you know, Johnny Ive and his colleagues at Apple, we give them the credit for the iPhone. And of course, they do deserve a lot of credit. But what they were doing was assembling pre-existing inventions. And most of those inventions, interestingly enough, were produced by the government. There are a lot of stories in the book about private sector entrepreneurship. But ideas don't always come from the private sector. They can come from the government. And in the case of the iPhone, a lot of the work on the processor, the internet, GPS, the touchscreen, even the algorithms inside the iPhone, and of course Siri, all of them came from the government, often military technology. So Siri was designed for fighter pilots originally. So it's fascinating to pick this apart and to look at where the ideas actually came from.
We are talking about the stories behind some of the inventions that that shaped our lives, that shaped our relationships, that shaped the modern economy. Our guest is Tim Harford. He is the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. He's also a journalist, an economist, and a broadcaster. If you have an invention that you would like to talk about, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Maybe there is an invention that you can't imagine living without. Maybe there is an invention that you wish had not been invented. Hey, Pac-Man, you also, Tim, have video games on your list. How did video games reinvent the, how we live?
Yeah, there's a moment I describe in that chapter where a young man, a student at MIT, goes home for the weekend, goes home to see his parents in Lowell, Massachusetts, and he steps off the train. It's late at night. It's a January night, crisp, clear evening. And he looks up at the star field and the beautiful pinpoints of the stars above his head. And he instinctively reaches forward to grab the video game controller, and he's looking for the spaceship. Because he this is in the 1970s, he has been incessantly playing the first serious video game, which was called Space War. And he's maybe the first ever person to have had that kind of hallucination where, you know, you just can't get the game out of your head. The one that used to get me was Tetris. Everybody who plays video games has their own video game. They would fall asleep dreaming of this game and wake up dreaming of this game. And he was the first guy to have it. So I talk about Space War, this amazing game. And of course, it's a big industry now, computer games. But it's also reshaped the world in ways we don't always anticipate. There are quite a lot of evidence now that video games are reshaping the American labor market, because young people, particularly young men, are deciding they would rather be playing games. So why would I go and get a job when I could instead live in my parents' basement and play really, really awesome computer games? It's hard to be absolutely sure that this is happening, but we've got some pretty decent evidence of disconnection from the labor market, but also that these young men, they're perfectly happy. Normally, when people are disconnected from the labor market, it's a really miserable, depressing experience. People hate it. People really value their jobs. But for these young men, it doesn't seem to be the case. They're like, no, that's fine. Why would I go to work as a Starbucks barista when I could be a Starship commander? And so the video game, and this points towards the possible future, because, of course, these games are only going to get better. They're going to be all-encompassing. They're going to be, you know, we're going to be wearing goggles, virtual reality headsets. Maybe the future of the economy is just one big video game. Who knows?
Wow. Donald emailed, the personal computer has really changed all of our lives. Can't argue with that.
No, you can't. And the personal computer isn't one of the things on my list of 50, because, as I mentioned earlier, I'm trying to tell unexpected stories. Mm-hmm. But it's amazing how many other inventions are connected to the personal computer. So the compiler, which is basically the system that enables humans to speak in a vaguely understandable language to computers, that was developed by an amazing woman called Grace Hopper. She was a U.S. Navy officer, and she developed the compiler. Another really interesting invention connected to computers is public key cryptography. And what fascinates me about this is one of those inventions where nobody knew it was coming. So I described earlier barbed wire, where everybody was working for years and years on barbed wire. They knew the problem they needed to solve, and then in a few years' time, they came up with the invention. Public key cryptography is completely the opposite. Hundreds of years of mathematicians playing around with prime numbers, just because it's interesting. And then in the 1970s, computer scientists go, hey, all this work that's been done on prime numbers, we could use it to create a new kind of code, a new kind of security code, and that might be useful. And then another 20 years pass, and e-commerce starts to come along in the 1990s, and you need a way of securely transmitting a credit card to an online company. You need to encode your credit card and send the encoded details of your credit card, but how are they going to unlock those details, right? Well, you could send the key to the code, but then a hacker could steal the key. So how would you send the code, but not the key, but they could still unlock the code? Well, this is why it's called public key cryptography, and it's all based on these prime numbers. And it's all based on this research that was done by mathematicians really in the 1700s with no idea that Amazon was ever going to exist. So it's a fascinating story.
I started our discussion with my thoughts about being so spoiled by the air conditioner that I was able to turn on and give myself some comfort to a hot and stuffy house yesterday. What is the story behind the air conditioner?
Yeah, the air conditioner was originally designed to help with color printing. So about 100 years ago, you're trying to print in four color. And to do that, you have to put the paper through the printing press several times with different inks. And if the paper slightly changes in size because of changing humidity, it's going to be slightly offset, the colors won't match up, and the whole thing will just look terrible. So you've got to control the humidity for this process. And so air conditioning, we don't call it air cooling. We call it air conditioning because it was conditioning the air. It was stripping out the humidity to make printing possible. But, of course, the moment it was developed, people started to realize, hang on, it's in a New York summer, for example, it's way more comfortable to be in the room with the printing press. So people started using it just for reasons of comfort. And it shaped the economy in a number of ways. So the summer blockbuster in movie theaters, that's because of air conditioning. Movie theaters used in many parts of America used to be uninhabitable in the summer, but bringing the air conditioning, the movie theater is a place where you can go to keep cool. The same thing with the shopping mall. And it's shaped the economy in more fundamental ways too. So big, dense cities full of skyscrapers in hot places. You can't build a skyscraper in Houston or in Dallas or in Miami or, for that matter, in Singapore or Shanghai. It's impossible to have a big glass structure in these hot places without air conditioning. So that's shifting the entire center of gravity, both of the United States, but also of the world.
Jill in Rhinelander is with us. Hi, Jill.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
My contribution is indoor plumbing and the flush toilet.
Yeah, that probably was pretty convenient.
I think it has changed a lot.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, it's an incredibly important invention. And in the book, I zoom in particularly on the S bend as being the symbol of this, because it's such a simple idea. You just put a bend in the pipe, so water accumulates in the bend. And then the smell of the sewers doesn't come up into your home. The vats don't come into your home. You're protected by the water, and you can just flush it away. And of course, if you said, well, would you do without the internet, or you can do without the S-bend? I'd give up the internet and I'd keep the S-bend. It's a tremendously important invention.
I never realized that's why it was an S-shape. John in Brown Deer. Hi, John.
Good morning, and thank you for accepting my call. And I have two inventions that I think were very important. The first is the internal combustion engine, which did away with our horse-drawn and horse-powered transportation economy. And the second is the transistor, which allowed for the miniaturization of data storage and led directly to the miniaturization of telecommunication devices, such as the cell phone. So I'd like your guest to comment on those two inventions.
Yeah, and then there's always the transistor radio, too.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, from transistors, we then get to the integrated circuit, and we'd ever more reduce. Yes, absolutely, the foundation of the information technology revolution. So it's a great suggestion. And the internal combustion engine, very important. In the book, I talk particularly about the diesel engine, which is a particular kind of internal combustion engine, partly because of the sad story of Rudolf Diesel, who invented it. He is an amazing man. He invented this highly efficient engine, which really powers, we don't think of it, but it powers ships all over the world, as well as powering big trucks and many automobiles as well. But he never really got it to work reliably in his lifetime, in his short lifetime, I should say, because unfortunately he took his own life because he couldn't pay back his debts that he'd run up trying to develop this engine. But your guest is absolutely right to identify that it totally changed our reliance on the horse. So I've just got some data here from the book. It says that a city of 500,000 people might have 100,000 horses, each one liberally coating the streets with 35 pounds of manure and a gallon of urine every day. So you replace that with a small, reliable, affordable engine, and you've really solved a huge, huge problem for urban living. And if anybody is having their breakfast as they listen to this, I do apologize.
It's okay. We've heard worse. Donna in Bailey's Harbor is with us. Hi, Donna.
Hello. Well, my item would be plastic, which is a rather large subject matter, but it seems like it's a component of so many things, many of which I don't think are all that great, but certainly important.
You have plastic in the book, Tim.
I do have plastic in the book. It's a very important invention. And the first commercial or synthetic plastic was developed by a guy called Leo Bakerlund, and it was named after him, Bakelite, of course. Remarkable guy. He made a fortune, lost his mind towards the end, sadly. You're absolutely right that plastic is, I mean, it's everywhere. And, of course, it has some serious environmental damage as well. I mean, I feel, very conflicted about this stuff. But yeah, there's one. Susan Frankel wrote a book about it, and she just kept a track of everything she touched during the day. She touched toilet paper. She touched the wooden floor in her bathroom. She touched the light switch. She touched a toothbrush. And at the end of the day, she touched about 100 objects that weren't made of plastic, and about 200 objects that were. So that, like, plastic was out, the stuff that was made of plastic was outnumbering the stuff that wasn't made of plastic 2-1. So no wonder we feel so conflicted about this invention, because it's enormously important, but big environmental consequences too.
We're going to check news again from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll continue talking with Tim Harford, who is the author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy. We welcome any questions you might have or some examples of inventions that you think shaped the modern economy. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org.
Swanson announces new three-course frozen dinners, the most complete frozen meal ever put in a single package. Complete.
The TV dinner, one of the inventions mentioned in our guest's book that we are discussing this hour, one of the inventions that reinvented the way we live, changed the way the food we eat is prepared, the TV dinner. So we are we'll have our guest talk about that, and we will welcome your calls with the inventions that you think were most influential to society, that made a big difference in our modern economy, or changed the way we lived, the way we worked, the way we played. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Tim Harford is a journalist, economist, and broadcaster, senior columnist at the Financial Times and author of 50 Inventions That Shape the Modern Economy. So, Tim, tell us the story behind the TV dinner.
Well, the story behind the TV dinner is I was originally going to write a chapter about something else completely. I was going to write a chapter about the washing machine. And the reason was, everybody said, the washing machine is completely transformative for the economic lives of women. You compare the 1930s to, say, the 1980s. Over that 50 years, women were able to get out of the home, not spend hours and hours doing housework, and instead earn a living, get economic independence working outside because of the labor-saving potential of the washing machine. So I thought, this is a very important story. I need to write about this. But then when I looked at the data, it turns out the washing machine didn't save women any time. Women were mostly doing the housework, but the amount of time spent on laundry didn't change. We just did a lot more laundry. And so we'd smell a lot better and our clothes are cleaner, but it didn't save time. But what did save time, huge amounts of time, was more convenient food. So everything from frozen dinners, microwavable meals, and the freezer, the microwave, but also things like chicken that comes pre-plucked and maybe pre-seasoned, ready meals for one, potato chips instead of having to make your own mashed potatoes or boiled potatoes, all sorts of snack food, even things like pre-chopped salads and pre-prepared pasta sauces, canned food. All of this saved an enormous amount of time spent on housework, and that time usually had been spent by women, and so it freed up time for them, and they were able to, if they wished to, go out of the home and make money and get some kind of economic independence. So hugely important. But originally, I thought it was going to be the washing machine.
Yeah, that's interesting. Did you look into whether all those processed foods and turned into having a big downside or not?
Yeah, well, I did. And there's some really interesting work on this that argues that one of the reasons why we have such a problem with obesity now is because of the nature of the food system has changed. And because it takes less time to get calories, it's much easier to do it. So, for example, you think about fried potatoes, like roast potatoes, potato chips, and French fries. They used to be complicated things to make. You have to heat up a pan of hot oil and finally cut all the potatoes and then fry them. And it would be a real treat. It would take a long time to do this. Now you can just go to the corner store, buy a bag of potato chips, or you can go to a fast food restaurant, get French fries, or there are oven chips. So it's much, you would call them oven fries, I guess. I'm calling them chips. But it's much easier to get the calories on board. And, you know, we have weak wills. You know, if the food's there, we eat it. So the availability of convenience food has a clear downside in our waistline.
Let's go back to the phones. Peter in Ladysmith is with us. Hi, Peter.
Hello. I'm actually driving a truck between Ladysmith and Hayward. I'm from Eau Claire, but I guess that doesn't matter. But the single most important invention in humankind, in my opinion, and it actually led to the TV dinner, is the invention of agriculture. It obviously changed everything on this planet and influences our economy today.
Just agriculture in general, Peter?
Well, we used to be hunter-gatherers, and then once we started settling down and growing our own food, that changed everything, from then on till now.
Well, yeah, I guess that goes back to the plow, Tim.
It does. No, I completely agree with Peter. Agriculture, hugely important, did change everything. But I'd be a bit more specific. It wasn't just agriculture. It was a particular kind of crop. It was the cereals, the grains, rather than, for example, potatoes or cassava. This is a point that the political scientist James Scott makes in a new book called Against the Grain. And what he emphasizes is that the thing about agriculture, it's not just that you've got a stable food source in the ground, it's predictable. It's that the harvest comes every year. and you've got a store of grain. If someone wants to come and take that away from you, and if they've got the muscle power to do it, they can do it. So suddenly you have armies raiding, stealing each other's grain, and you also have taxation. So you can have a central government that organizes, takes some of your grain, protects you against other people who might want to take your grain. None of this happens in a hunter-gatherer society. So it's agriculture, very important, but it's particularly the cereals as a crop rather than certain other kinds of crop. There's another interesting story to be told about irrigation, the way that we share water or take water from each other, how we distribute scarce water. Big problem in many parts of the world, including California. And really the story of how we manage irrigation systems like dams and canals is also the story about how we cooperate over anything. So, I mean, these inventions, they're not just tools, they're not just clever problem-solving ideas. They tell us something about the way human societies and human economies work. That's why I had so much fun with the book.
Our next caller is Todd in Appleton. Hi, Todd.
Hey, good morning, Joy. Good morning to your guests. I think one of the inventions that had the biggest impact on our society more recently than the invention of agriculture is power steering. And I think it just made, if you've ever driven a car that didn't have power steering and you tried to pull away from a parking space or something where you have to just turn the wheels manually as hard as you possibly can before you can even, you know, accelerate to get out of your parking space, you know what an advantage power steering is over non-power. And I think, you know, going back to the TV dinner and what that did to free women up, this had the same impact as far as allowing women, giving women more mobility and, the ability to go out and shop more often or to hold down jobs to get to work and so on and so forth. So I think that had a huge bearing on that, probably right along with the automatic transmission.
Yeah, I guess I never thought of the power steering. Tim, any thoughts on that?
No, it's fascinating, actually. I hadn't thought of that at all, but one of the things I wanted to do was not just pick the big stuff like the steam engine or, you know, the car, but also pick the little things in life that we sometimes overlook. So I'm gonna find out more about power steering. But a couple of examples of that from the book are the elevator. We often, you know, just overlook the elevator. We take it for granted. Very important. Another one is the barcode. Barcode really reshaped global supply chains. It wasn't just about shorter lines at the checkout. It really tipped the balance of power in retail from the small shops to the big stores. So, you know, I love the suggestion of power steering because when you zoom in on these little things and you really start understanding the difference they've made, there's very often a great story to tell.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit, too, before we run out of time, about paper, because paper was big in Wisconsin. We were a big paper-making state for a while there. But talk about a piece of paper.
Yeah, one of my favorite inventions in the book, because everybody told me, oh, you must do the Gutenberg press. You know, the printing press put Europe at the center of world intellectual civilization. It gave us the textbook, the newspaper, the novel, mass literacy, such a revolution. And the more I looked at it, the more I thought, well, yeah, of course, very important, but it doesn't make any economic sense without paper. You can print on animal skin parchment, but you would never make any money because animal skin parchment is too expensive. You'd have to kill, I did the math, you'd have to kill 250,000 sheep to make, you know, the print run of one book. And so developing paper was very, very important in making the printing press possible. And, of course, we use it. We have everything from toilet paper to wallpaper to sandpaper. I mean, there's so many different ways to use this invention. But one of the things I wanted to do in 50 inventions that shaped the modern economy was to call people's attention to the stuff we overlook, not just the car and the plane and the computer, but the barcode and the IKEA Billy bookcase and humble stuff like paper. Very important. Change the world.
You know, as we're, again, running short on time, I mean, paper, I'm thinking that I'm reading off of an iPad right now. A lot of places are going paperless. I mean, times are changing, too. So new inventions are being made every day.
Yeah, but not so many places are really going paperless. The global production of paper continued to increase all the way through to about 2015, just a couple of years ago. We kept finding new uses for it, and it's still a hugely important invention. And that's true of a lot of inventions. Pencils, still very important. The bicycle, the world makes twice as many bicycles every year as it does automobiles, still. So we shouldn't forget the old inventions, because very often they're not replaced, they're not superseded. Sometimes they are, but very often the new invention sits alongside the old invention, and we use both, and life is richer for it.
Well, we have just a minute to go. I just want to acknowledge that we have listeners who wanted to talk about the sewing machine. Someone else wanted to talk about the stirrup for saddles. Somebody else just said the invention of synthetics really changed things. And there are many, many more. But we have just a minute left. What is the takeaway you'd like to leave with our listeners?
Well, I finished the book by talking about the light bulb, because I wanted to remind people how incredibly expensive it used to be to create light. You literally would have to work for hours and hours and hours to create just a few minutes of usable light. And now we flick on a compact fluorescent bulb or an LED bulb, and you can have all the light you like, and you don't have to think about how much it costs because it's so cheap. George Washington spent thousands and thousands of dollars a year just lighting his home. Paying for candles. It was a luxury that he felt was worth paying for. So I just wanted to remind people that although many of these inventions do have downsides, they do create losers as well as winners. We're very, very lucky to live at the time we do, to benefit from all the inventions that our forebears have created for us and that we can enjoy and use every day.
Thank you very much, Tim. Tim Harford, author of 50 Inventions That Shaped the Modern Economy.